Les colloques du Collège de France.
So, let me introduce our next speaker, Professor Christine Silberhorn. Professor Christine Silberhorn is a professor at Paderborn University, and she is a spokesperson of the Institute for Photonic Quantum Systems. I must say that I met Professor Silberhorn, I think, for the first time 11 years ago. I'm a solid state physicist from the beginning, and I was entering the field of quantum optics. And I was in one of these first conferences in quantum optics, and everyone was talking about some Christine doing amazing work. And I had to know what the work was about, and I was very happy to discover your work, Christine, on integrated quantum photonics. So you are a well-known world leader in integrated quantum photonics, manipulating light in integrated quantum system, working toward quantum technologies with applications that are broad, rather either in quantum communication and quantum computation. And you have been pioneering different types of quantum computation using not single photons that as I mostly described during my lectures, but the quadrature of the electromagnetic field and a protocol in particular that we call Gaussian boson sampling. Christine Silberhorn, Professor Christine Silberhorn, is a fellow of the Optica, which is the former American Optical Society, yes, and of the Max Planck School of Photonics, and I'm very glad that we can have her insight here today. Please welcome her.
Well, let me start thanking Pascal for inviting me here and also for the very kind introduction. It's really an honor to be here and being able to speak to you about our research. I call the talk Scaling Photonic System for Quantum Information Processing, but in fact what I will try to give you is a kind of overview where photonic peoples are and also what we did in Paderborn to contribute to that field. Now, let me start with a very broad thing. I think Pascal introduced the field very nicely, but nevertheless, what are we talking about? Quantum technologies, this is the standard pillars or flagship where you find them a lot, has quantum communication, has quantum metrology, and quantum simulation and quantum computers. I think I don't have to lay down what all that is. We really think that we are building up a new technology and these really fascinating physics we just heard in different things, what we can do with single particles, single atoms, and we're exploring the landscape. I'm personally deeply impressed by that because I'm really came from the generation where we saw for the first time all these phenomena that we really try to build up a technology out of that is extremely fascinating. So I do love photons, so I will make a little bit of advertisement, sorry if I'm biased, why photons are great. And one thing you can immediately say from that is that if you're really playing with photons, they call it quantum photonics, you can contribute to all of these fields because the hardware which we're building up is kind of almost the same, which is maybe a little bit different than in other things. And I'm extremely convinced that it will be used and needed for the future developing of quantum technologies. For this simple means, I can't see a different way how you can transmit information over long distances than rather using photons. So this is one of the driving motivations. But let me tell you, this is, I think, why exploring this field for my personal motivation is very rewarding. What are we trying to do at the moment? And again, let's try very broad. And well, we just heard quantum photonics or experimental in photonics can get very complex these days, and also in photons and playing with photons. This is actually still a picture of my own lab, and it's a simple one. So we have huge optical benches with a lot of mirrors, a lot of things, and then we say we do a great new technology. Now, if you go to an engineering person, he would say, well, yes, you do, but maybe if it's forward-looking future, you would rather like to have something like that, and this again, it's about integrated photonics. If you want to have a technology, you want to scale up in different ways, and I understand scalability in getting systems larger, of course, but not only larger, but also make them scalable for market. And then I think going to integrated photonics integrated quantum photonics is a very promising and I think also necessary route. What we are doing in Paderborn is we develop the foundations for the quantum technologies, and in contrast to what we just saw, we are really light-based. We use directly the quantum properties of light, simply the fact that the light is quantized and we can play with that. So how can we scale? And there, light has different possibilities. And I have been doing that, or we have been doing that for quite some time. And one thing I already introduced, this I call QPIC, for quantum photonic integrated circuits, and we want to develop them. And one special thing we are looking at, I will comment on that, is that we are using Chi2 materials in contrast to Chi3 materials. Chi3 materials are used a lot. Chi2 materials are not so much, but they have distinct advantages, but they're harder to produce. Basically, large-scale fabs are not really available yet. And then you can come up with other things. If you really want to have large systems, and for us, we call it large modes, so these are different individual channels you can approach. We are right now looking a lot into frequency multiplexing, because frequencies is a fantastic degree of freedom. Why is that? Well, think of the internet. What really gives you the bandwidth and allows you to transmit a lot of information is that you encode your information on different frequency bins. And it's cheap to some extent, because you don't have to implement every single information carrier for itself, but you directly can parallelize them. So frequency encoding and frequency multiplexing is interesting. I say ultra-fast pulse quantum of light, it's kind of the same. This comes the motivation from the physics. Dealing with photonics, we have to do a lot of things measurement-based. So pulsed light we need, and pulses and frequencies, of course, are related to each other. Another cheap resource is time. If you don't encode things in different frequency channels, you can just use individual pulses. And also there's another cheap way of really doing that. And we have been playing with that quite some time. I also will come to that briefly at the end. But you see, there's plenty of possibilities that you can scale these systems. And my personal belief is if you really, really want to scale systems in photonics, we probably will need all of them. Because if you only concentrate on one of them, the scaling we need is tremendous. And thus, really, we have to find efficient ways of multiplexing information carriers. So, what I want to show you is some means which we are exploring to build practical and scalable photonic quantum systems. In particular, I want to talk about the technology we develop these days for photonic quantum PICs, so QPICs. I want to talk about engineering of quantum light. That means getting under the control our time frequency degrees of freedom. So this is a necessity, but it's also a nice playground, as I also showed you, to have extremely efficient information encoding. And then I want to show you one of our mini computers, I have to say, these days in photonics, but we try to have small scale systems, basically for exploring fundamental physics in the framework you can do within an academic group. But there, we try to understand and do things which are probably more on the fundamental side, but necessary, like benchmarking systems, to really try to look into these systems from an academic view. So let's get started. Before that, allow me briefly to introduce my group. This is at Paderborn University. As Pascal already said, we are building up at the moment an institute called FOX, Photonic Quantum Systems there. But this is my own group, my Integrated Quantum Optics group. I show you that because it shows kind of that very different expertise, if you take engineering quantum technology together, have to come together. We have technology with a clean room where we can produce things. We build out of them devices. And then we have these application things. We look on quantum computing, and then we ask, what does that pulsed light, ultra-fast pulsed light, frequency encoding does? And you see the group leaders here, Michael Stesby for computing, Benjamin Brecht for ultra-fast technology, Laura Puttberg and Harald Hermann, the devices things. it's by far not only my work, but really you need a lot of people, clever people, to do that, and I want to acknowledge them right away. Christoph Eigner really cares that we can do all the infrastructure, because building up clean room facilities and getting the techniques there, material science, is also very important. It's just a glance to see what's behind the scenes. So this is the outline. I want to talk about integrated quantum devices briefly, about pulse quantum light, and about quantum computing. Let's see how it will do in time. I will try to be quick. It will only give some flashes, and I'll try to give you an impression what all this research is about. So one of the ideas which I told you is building scalable qubits, and the non-limit material of choice we are looking in Paderborn, and this is why I'm there, because this is a pioneering place for Chi2 non-linear waveguides, is lithium niobate, and I will come to thin-film lithium niobate. I think lithium niobate is an extremely promising platform for different reasons. First of all, in principle, or not only in principle, a lot of things can be integrated on these platforms, functionalities you need, sources. I will tell you a lot about parametric down conversion sources, which has been a workhorse for centuries, I would say, but still they can be developed further, that they really can be compact, integrated, and efficient. You can include into that coupled emitters. Memories have been shown, superconducting single photon detectors. One thing which is very important, you can have electro-optic modulators. What that means, you can have extremely fast switches, and this is where lithium niobate is known nowadays. If you ask behind the internet, what are the switching? It's lithium niobate. It's a billion stock market, this material, because you have an electric response. And if you think about these things that you want to have communication systems, feed forward, this is very important. And of course, classical controls also have to be included later on. So this platform is stable and scalable in some sense, because it's an integrated platform. It can have very low loss. This has become clear over the last 10 to 20 years. It can have very efficient frequency mixing, which is interesting if you want to have very efficient parametric down conversion sources, but also transduction. So if you want to change between different frequencies, I will not be talking about that. And maybe one of the most important things, it enables very fast photon routing. Now, let me say that I started in Paderborn 2010, and there fin-film lithium niobate was not even present. But we started in looking, what can we do? How can we really come from that tabletop experiments to experiments which are integrated? And there's two main lines, so to speak, I will be reporting. The one is, how can we play with non-linearities and frequency mixing? That comes under the term of source engineering. There you really should make sure the spatial degree is kind of clean, but you have to have all the other things well controlled. And I don't go into detail there, I can just tell you, people think it's extremely easy, just go in a waveguide. It's not that easy, because you run in all kinds of different problems. But if you're interested, I'm happy to talk about that. And then we can build up larger circuits, and again, you have to make sure that you really have the technology ready for that thing. The technology, what that means is you have to be able to fabricate these things. And I think that's one of the things which is nice. We have in Paderborn the possibility to produce our systems ourselves and tailor them to the needs of quantum. For example, extremely low loss, which is important, and, well, building whatever you want. This is what you do for that. You have passive routing, which waveguide fabrications for generating states or transduction, you need periodic polling. The active manipulation, you need all kinds of layer deposition. And then something which is quite forgotten for a lot of things, you want to get off chips, so you need dielectric coatings, and you want to connect fibers to that. So I don't expect you that you understand all that, but you probably get some glimpse that there's a lot of machinery behind the things, that you really have to have a lot of equipment and have to handle and master that to really get high-performance devices, because quantum means you have to have better devices than you can have classically, and I think that's the challenge which we will see the next years where we can do that. I told you already that Paderborn is a place where working with integrated devices on lithium niobate well has been done for quite some time. My predecessor Wolfgang Sola built up labs there, and already in 2010 they introduced a new platform. By now, I think a lot of people know that. It was one of the places where LNOI, or TIFLIN, how it's called, this was pioneered. So the wafer-like structure was demonstrated there for the first time. It was around the time when I arrived there. And for those of you who don't know that, this thin film lithium niobate has really changed a lot. Marco Lonka's group in Harvard did the first really ultra-high Q lithium niobate microring resonator and basically demonstrated that you can have very low loss. And I think that's important, and high speeds. So this is a new technology, smaller, faster, better. And well, this is just thing right now, the field exploited. And a lot of people in classical optics use that for all kinds of things. And also, we are highly interested in that. Why is that? So what is it? So waveguides have been existing for quite some time, and the lithium niobate standard waveguides you see in the left, this is titanium infused waveguides, and the point here is that the index contrast between the substrate and the things where the guiding region is rather low. This implies that you have rather large waveguides and you can't really have large scale systems. Now, if you manage to have a thin film of lithium niobate on top of an insulating layer, so meaning there's a different refractive index, we get thin film lithium niobate, and that index contrast is high. And then it's becoming realistic that you just produce your waveguides by etching. And that means that you go from a micrometer scale to the nanometer scale, and that means all of a sudden you can really build circuits. And that's, you just see the dimensions between single mode core and these waveguides. And this is why it's now fascinating that we really can think up to build out larger, large-scale systems. I should say that this new material platform means, from the technological side, a completely new technology, because going from micro-machining to nano-machining means you need completely new equipment. And this is a challenge which we also faced in Paderborn. We know the material extremely well, but we did micro-machining with optical lithography. To go now to nano-machining with e-beam lithography and what have you is something which we're in the process at the moment, and this is also why, well, we created that institute, because it's also a question of money, I should admit. Nevertheless, this is now our own fabrication, so you do a lithography steps. In principle, that's from the basics very easy. You do your lithography, you do dry etching, annealing, and this is what you then get. You get rigid position problems, all kinds of things, and you have to learn to make extremely smooth and clean waveguides, because if they're not clean and smooth, you get a lot of losses. Okay, fine, so you work on that to get good devices, and at the end you say, oh, I really have decreased the losses tremendously. That's from the physics maybe not so exciting, but from what we need for quantum technology, it's extremely important. Then, of course, you can also bring them close to each other, and these kind of things allows us to split light and to have couplers, and all that has to be developed. One thing which I was a little bit naive when we started that, one thing is, of course, if you go from micro to nano, is that you have to develop the technology, but you also have to do much more modeling. You're really going to almost the wavelength regime, and modeling these waveguides, understanding what's going on with that, is the next challenge. And I should say, now our devices are calculated on HPC computers, because otherwise the overhead is just nothing. So you have yet another expansion of dimension on that, but good. And this is just a small example why that is important. So we improved our technology a lot, and this is just a small loss model where we kind of had just modeled the surface. And these are these measurement dots. And you say, oh, my technology just doesn't work. We were just stupid. We should have calculated what the modes are. And then you see that if you do a proper modeling, that the different values you got for the losses for the waveguides, but just because of different dimensions have also by the physics different losses. So you better should understand very well what you're doing. That's the take-home message. And for that, you need modeling. Good. But we are quantum persons. So let me introduce one fundamental principle. I think you know it, and I think Pascal also had it, the Hongomantel interference. Because if you do a new technology, you also should test if the functionality you want is really functional. So two photons imping in a beam splitter, these, if they were particles, we had that four possibilities. Due to destructive interference, if they're indistinguishable, both photons will always exit in one port. It's the most fundamental property, I think, in this photonic circuit thing, because it's a fundamental quantum property. It's also at the heart of quantum computation. The way you test that, you bring these two photons on a 50-50 beam splitter, as it's shown here, but you introduce a delay, which introduces distinguishability, and then you don't get that interference, and if there's zero delay, then you see your quantum property. So we did that. So we produced our first samples, and then we test these 50-50 coupler, and it should work nicely. And we saw, yes, it does work nicely, with a visibility of 93%. That was good. That was the good news. But then we tested it with other single photon sources. I will come back to that. And we realized we should have more, 3%. Now you can say 3%, come on, we don't care. Well, we do. We want to scale things, and scaling things is then to the power of n, and then we really have to fight for the percents. What we think what's happening is that this coupler is just has hybrid modes. We didn't do the proper modeling, and so you should look a little bit closer when just bringing waveguides together was too naive. But again, it's another highlight that you have to test technology for the functionalities and probably also have to do more modeling. Then another process which we need, and I will explain in a minute, is periodic poling. So by applying fields, so we structure our waveguides again, another lithography process, and we put electrodes on that, and you can change the material and can reverse signs of two nonlinearity. You need the technology for that. And why do we want that? Well, I told you that we want to implement parametric downconversion sources, so let me briefly introduce them. So we have pump light in a nonlinear waveguide, so K2 nonlinearity, and due to the nonlinear action between the pump light and the waveguide, we are generating pairs of photons, signal and idler. And these change of statistics helps us to generate our states. This process has to obey energy and momentum conservation, so the frequencies of signal and idle have to add up to the frequency of the pump, and also in the k-vector, so here these are basically the propagation constants, they also have to add up, and because there's dispersion, we have typically that these k-vectors don't fulfill that. Now fortunately, this periodic poling allows us to introduce a grading vector, and this grading vector basically allows us to shift the frequency at any point what we have to have. What we get out of that between these signal idlers is a joint spectrum. I will come back to that in the second part of the talk, but this is a basic principle we need, and the take-home message here, we need the periodic poling, 2 pi over lambda, and we have to do that very well. If we don't get nice phase matching properties. For the experts, that means because of we're creating everything from the vacuum, that we don't get nice spectra altogether. And for the technology, that means, again, you have an extremely high-quality technology. Now, these are more recent results on our own technology on FinFin lithium niobate. There, we produced one wave, one source for a two-color source, where we pump at 525 and generate signal and idle at 810 and 1550. This is interesting because this bridges these two wavelengths for transduction. This is the phase matching. And for the experts, we are pretty proud because it's an extremely good phase matching curve. So that means that we really have extremely good quality of poling. Again, this is important for technology. But one thing to highlight here is the brightness we can get with these FinFin lithium niobate. Because of the strong confinement of the light, we get extremely strong interactions. And I think this really, on top of having all these miniaturized systems, we also can get one or two orders of magnitude higher efficiencies in terms of pump light. And I think this really will also enable us completely new devices. On top of that, we can dispersion engineer that. But that's, again, only for the experts. And here you see the brightness. Very briefly, so this is the technology we have up to now. Again, for the experts, we are in state of the art. Losses, what people can do around the world. I think we are leading in having extremely long periodic polings. Up to 70 millimeter, we have extremely homogeneous polings. We have very bright sources, and we are working on modulators there too. That basically gives us all the different stepstones we need to build up these quantum technology and play with these tools. With that, I would like to shift gears. I'm running a little behind of time. And now come to a topic which is more physics, not technology, and I'm talking about pulse quantum light. Very briefly again, what is a single photon? We heard that already, and I'm pretty sure that Pascal also introduced that. And this is what your basic quantum optics lecture tells you. You have a state, and we kind of have in mind a single pulse. And then it's pretty clear what a single photon is. It's a light beam which has, if you look at probabilities, one and nothing else. Now, you can do that in different ways. But one thing which is clear is that this storyline is not complete. Well, what we do is we do the quantization of a plane wave. Somehow we have to describe the photon numbers, but we also have to describe what is the frequencies. And in standard quantum optics, you first do everything and say, and now we have a monochromatic frequency in this we quantize. That's true, but not really true, because I have a contradiction here. You have a pulse here, and then I have a monochromatic wave. That's not really possible. Why? Well, it's obvious. If you have monochromatic waves, and before you transform them, they're infinite in time. So that's not the object we have in any experiment, and particularly not if you have pulsed light, which we want to drive there. So what do we have to do? Well, it's clear how to come from monochromatic waves to pulsed light. We need wave packets. So we get coherent superposition, and this we call pulse temporal modes. Why modes? In spatial mode degrees, you're very used to that. A spatial mode, you get the superposition of different k vectors, and then you have a localized thing. It's here the same thing in time. And then you have nicely also a wave packet, which is localized in time and frequency. Well, if you accept that, there's an envelope function, and we can define different envelope functions. Again, idea which is very common in spatial modes. And these different envelope functions you have there now define different modes with that orthogonality condition. And all of them are kind of localized. But it's interesting because instead of dealing with different individual spectral modes, which we could use for multiplexing, we also can use different shapes, different pulse modes, and we can play with them. And really, well, you will see, you can encode information on that. And they are important for us to understand this parametric downconversion process more closely. I'm not going into detail there. That's for the expert. But anyhow, if you do what I just showed you, a pulsed light, a pump and nonlinear waveguide, I actually don't get just a single photon in two modes or in two nice Gaussian wave packets, but I get a whole slew of different modes coming out of that. They're all in these temporal modes. They're correlated. So they're generating pairs of temporal modes. This is done via a Schmidt decomposition, but you don't have to know that. This is a nutshell of that. And if you want to do experiments on that and you can't resolve them in one side and you just detect that, you get a high mixture. And they're basically not useful. So people try to get rid of this zoo, and this goes under the name of source engineering. Nowadays, a lot of people do that. You control the spectral correlations, that there's no temporal spectral information from one to the other. You basically generate out of them only one Gaussian wave packet. And these sources are needed if you want to have massive spatial multiplexing. As, let's see how much time I will have, for the experts, if you want to take Gaussian boson sampling, a normal source won't work. You need these engineered sources because otherwise you don't get a nice system. If you engineer them, you can have ideal parametric downconversion source for integrated networks. It's pulsed light, which you synchronize. It has high purity and high brightness. However, one development is if you have already this very nice high dimension alphabet, which are these different temporal modes which are lying on top of each other, why don't we encode information directly into that? And that's what we're exploring with that frequency multiplexing. So we started not in different individual frequency bins, But we really started to do that in these temporal modes, pulse temporal modes. High dimensional encoding is useful because it offers you more information capacity per photon. You can also show that it can guarantee more security. Having these temporal modes, they're robust in transmission. They're completely compatible with integrated devices and fiber networks. However, the measurement, the manipulation is not easy because you cannot just use temporal detections or spectrometers because this will mix them. So it requires temporal spectral engineering. And that's what we do a lot these days. So the one thing I already explained for parametric down conversion, if you engineer correlations out, then you can have just from a Gaussian wave packet, generated Gaussian wave packets, or you can engineer that you have something different. The other tool we have developed is what we call a quantum pulse gate. This is for manipulation and detection. So here we have input states. This is our high dimensional input state. By engineered some frequency generation, we are able to address only the part of the state we want to have. Here, for example, the Gaussian wave packet, we transfer to different frequency and then we can measure it again with spectral filters. And you can dial up different of that and can really have like a WDM decoupler for these temporal modes. For the experts, it's a coherent selection of these different frequency modes. And it's a nice tool we have been developing over the last years. So let me first show how we deal with a state generation with source engineering. So we have our source, which I showed you, which is an engineered source. So this is a Schmidt mode 1, so completely decorrelated. Now, if you start playing with the shape of the pump pulse, which we haven't been used a lot, then you can show that you can really generate all kinds of different pulse shapes and correlations, and basically you can have up to 20 very controlled temporal modes and play with them and then use this Hilbert space. That's a very, very technical, but what it basically means, we take, instead of a 20 by 20 circuitry, we directly send that, but we have a 20 by 20 system of modes which can be manipulated and directly played with that. We published that work, and this is another side remark, so to speak, and then Kiki Deckers and Jonathan Leach came to us and said, you know that with this system, you can also quite easily observe high-dimensional non-locality by using just different multimode out-spectral measurements. We were quite surprised that this is possible because I personally was convinced if I really want to have different mode bases which you need for these high-dimensional non-locality that you will need more than only spectral measurements, but not if you engineer your states. If you're interested in that, again, I'm happy to talk to you about that, but I will not go into detail on that. Now let me briefly say what about the manipulation, this quantum pulse gate. This is a system, the dispersion engineered such that pump and input lights have the same group velocities. And in that way, we can have addressed these different outcomes. In recent work, we kind of produced a very specific waveguide with very specific properties. But basically, what we could do by that is in a clever way that we approach not only one of them, but we can have multiple outcomes simultaneously. So this device, the MQBG, translates every state which is in the Gaussian wave packet to one frequencies and the other wave packets to different frequencies. That's important if you want to do information, high-dimensional information encoding. So because then you can basically do measurements on these different modes, and you can also do superpositions of measurements. And effectively, we showed here that these measurements work in five dimensions in the quantum regime. This is called measurement tomography. If you do quantum, I think Pascal showed you that it's not sufficient to only measure in one basis, but you always have these mutually unbiased bases. And here we could dial up arbitrary bases in the five dimensions. Now, if that's too technical, why is that interesting? Well, this is these are elements to really have high-dimensional encoding with better security, more efficiency. And I think it also can contribute to get multi-link networks in quantum repeater. The challenge is the development of devices, which we do, and really also to establish, new techniques. And I think we are quite excited that we can do these things now very efficiently. And these high-dimensional encoding schemes also leads us to fundamental science, which I'm skipping here too. The other thing where that quantum pulse gate has been proven very useful was for quantum metrology and quantum spectroscopy. I think this also has to be introduced already. But entanglement here and entanglement between light is extremely useful because you can upgrade classical systems. So limitations which you have in your system which were driven with classical light can be updated to get higher precisions. There is a field which is called microscopy or quantum interferometry of undetected photons. This highlights the fact that we can play with different frequencies and exploit correlations there. Very specifically, these quantum pulse gates allows us to have something like time frequency super resolution. So you can go beyond the resolution limits in time and frequencies. And we showed that we can improve timing resolutions by more than a factor of 100. And again, I don't go into specifica there, but it's quite exciting to see there what can be done if you have new devices. One thing I want briefly show you is a very recent work we did on frequency bin interferometry for reconstructing electric fields with low intensity. Again, it's the challenge or the quest is very easy. You have a light pulse, and that light pulse has an envelope and it has a phase, and this is illustrated here. So it has an imaginary part and a real part. And for fully characterizing these fields, you need to characterize both phase and frequency. Classical standard techniques always use non-linear interactions for that, like spider and frog, and it's hard. Now, if you want to play with the degree of freedom in the single photon regime, we must be able to efficiently characterize these single photon states. And there, this MQPG helps us to interfere frequencies, light at different frequencies, which normally you can't do. If the light is different frequency in a passive device, you can't do that. With the MQPG, we can do that, and we can basically look at correlation functions between these different fields with different phases. And if you do that, and then you can reconstruct in two-point correlation functions between different frequencies, the real and the imaginary part, and you can show it's known that this directly reconstructs amplitude and phase very nicely. And for the experts, again, you can measure the density operators of single photon states directly with that method, which is a powerful characterization technique for single photon states. We applied that here for single photon light, and you see, well, the amplitude is not reconstructed so well, but we don't care. We can put that in a spectrometer, but the phases across our pulses can be reconstructed extremely well. We can do that also with weak pump lights, pulses and unknown pump light. This is technical, but we are very happy that we are also able to characterize our states very precisely there. And last but not least in this direction, we are right now looking, can we do frequency multiplexed networks? And here just to illustrate the idea, normally multiplexing in a spatial domain requires huge circuits. And to be honest, this is a challenge. If you really want to have circuits which, well, already 30 modes, 100 modes. Also, we have nano devices. Try to hurry up. We can't do that. But by cascading elements, you can do that, and we are exploring that. So Pascal indicated I have 5 minutes for quantum computing, so I'm very brief on that. So let me just say, if we try to implement quantum computing with photons, it's quite different than almost all of the other systems. And the reason is that rather straightforward. Normally, we encode our qubits on matter, and then we have light to manipulate that. And then you get your computation. For photonics, it's different. We encode our information on single photons, and we let it propagate through light. It's pretty clear that defacing and losing photons is kind of different. You can translate one to the other, but this is my personal belief why probably we need very special algorithms there too. And there are special algorithms. There's measurement-based and sampling algorithms. All platforms which we need has to be reconfigurable and scalable. Time multiplexing is an interesting way. Frequency multiplexing I introduced already. I should say time multiplexing is extremely elegant. We did a lot of work on these things, demonstrate all kinds of circuitries. Xanadu used that approach then for the first time. We kind of had talked with them to build their quantum advantage system. We right now have a time integrated things to implement CNOT gates. We can show that we can build with our system, which is a recursive system, arbitrarily photonic processes. It's a theory work. I'm skipping over that. But basically, if you design your time multiplex nicely, you can really build all circuits is what you want. And this is a recipe to show you how you should program EOM modulators, basically. I'm not going into details there. This is one work we did where we implemented a CNOT gate. Let me briefly talk about boson sampling. I think it was introduced already by Pascal, but it's surprising if you put a lot of single photon states in just a linear circuitry and ask about the probability counting photons, what comes out of that? How hard can it be to analyze that? It was quite surprising that Arason Akisom showed that this is a problem which a classical computer can't solve. So it's a Sharpe hard problem. It's related to the permanent. I could say much about that. Now, the problem here is generating these single photon states. And that it was a problem. Of course, people tried right away, but they were fantastic experiments, but scaling to larger numbers was difficult. And then in 2014-17, something happened, and you see all of a sudden people can scale, but it's the scheme of Gaussian boson sampling, and I have to introduce that at least. So we were wondering, well, the input state is really tricky. You can do a lot of things, but generating single photons of high quality which interfere is extremely difficult. But we know that there are other states, so-called Gaussian or squeezed light, and if you put them in a linear network, you have an equivalently hard problem. So you harness squeezed light of light, these are these quadrature state, and then Gaussian boson sampling work quite nicely. We have seen over the years, I think, for me, extremely fascinating developments where quantum advantage, meaning really creating systems which a classical computer can't develop, has been demonstrated. The latest work, as far as I is the work from Shanwei Pans and Shulang Yu with more than 8,000 modes, by the way, with temporal multiplexing. And also applications are explored. So this is not a universal quantum computer, but it's special purpose things. And it's interesting to monitor this development. We also set up, so this is the Paderborn system, where we basically build up a system which is hybrid with our PDC sources, and then time-to-space multiplexing and a commercial chip. The special thing here is that we have our own engineered sources, which are extremely bright. This is just the characterizations. And one more minute? Oh, yeah. Okay. So to show you, what can you do in a university group? I think it's important. There's a lot of things out there. A lot of people try different things. We try to establish new benchmarking things inspired by quantum optics, and we just tested different types of samplings, if they're quantum or not. And it turns out that Gaussian boson sampling, if you look at the second-order correlations, doesn't have, for all phases, quantumness. So GBS strongly depends on the phases. And I think these benchmarking experiments are extremely important. So you look at these systems, and you first should see, do I have quantumness or not? And a lot of people don't do that. That's surprising. Why is that important? Well, at the same time, we analyze what applications are there, and one of the quantum applications is simulation of molecular vibrating spectra. Well, it turns out that the vast majority you can simulate with this Gaussian boson sampler doesn't need squeezing. So I mean, it doesn't need quantum states. So I think we should be very careful what we do there. And this is, I think, where university groups are really an important player for that. We also do photon counting experiments, but I don't have to talk about that. I think we hear more. So let me sum up. I tried to give you a glance on integrated devices, pulse quantum light, and a little bit about quantum computation. And with that, I would thank you for your attention. I would acknowledge the work of the people that people have been working on that, the funding, and last but not least, so this is a new institute we are building up. Thank you very much.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.